computers. This is why often we need to be connected to the internet to even be able to open our files. But the cloud is more than infrastructure as a service. It's not just a place where we store files or a place where the AI models are trained. I often describe the cloud as a Tesco or Sainsbury's of digital technologies, because basically every digital technology today can be purchased as a service on the cloud. Software, data, models, and of course also infrastructure. And actually, if we want to delve deeper into what the cloud is, it's something more than just a supermarket. Because if I'm thirsty, I go to Tesco, I buy a bottle of water, and then I leave and I start drinking the water. That water was produced somewhere else, of course not inside the supermarket, and I'm consuming it, let's say, on the street. Whereas the cloud is all of this combined. Everything happens together, which means that when we are consuming a service on the cloud, and the we is not just individuals, but also organizations and even states, we all do it always inside the cloud. And this is why also, adding to what Stan was saying, this dependence is particularly critical for Europe and the world at large.
Where is it?
That's a very good question, and actually you asked it before and I didn't answer it, and I should, because it seems that it's nowhere, right? Because it seems that the digital economy is just about data and intangibles like algorithms, these AI models, but actually this infrastructure, the data centers, they were historically primarily concentrated inside the US and of course secondarily China, because China is also a big player. But after the AI hype, after ChatGPT was released, these companies are starting, and when I say these companies, I'm particularly speaking of the cloud giants, Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. The three concentrate, for instance, in the UK, almost 80% of the market, and in Europe, in the rest of Europe, it's around 70%.
And very briefly, Stan, they're all American-owned.
They are. I mean, there are some European players, but the biggest players by far are American ones. Part of the reason is it requires enormous scale, it requires enormous resources to build these global networks. That kind of financing is more readily available in America or sometimes in China than it is in Europe.
Right, I think we'll dig into that a bit more in a moment. Seb Johnson, has Europe's reliance on US tech always been as great as it is now?
It's grown dramatically over the last 20 years. America has been at the forefront of technological evolution for the last 20 or 30 years. And I think with the new wave of AI technologies, it's got worse. You know, the model providers, AI, ChatGPT, Anthropic, the biggest AI companies in the world are all American. And so that reliance has grown. And all of the technology that underpins AI, which is chips like NVIDIA, that's grown. Even energy, we're not very good at producing domestic energy here, so we're reliant on foreign countries for energy. And like you say, the cloud providers and the data centers, we haven't done a good job of building them. And the UK is a terrible place to build data centers because it requires huge amounts of energy and ideally cooler climates. So when we do build sort of sovereign data centers, which we are, we're actually building them in Norway. So Nscale raised billions of dollars this year. It's one of the biggest financing rounds in UK tech history, all around sovereign AI. It's being built in Norway and the Nordic countries because it's much colder and they've got cheaper energy. So we are more reliant on American technology than we ever have been. But I would emphasize we are trying to change that, and that is changing. And this is the first opportunity that I've ever seen where we have this opportunity to be sovereign over the next wave of technology.
Stanley, can we just talk a moment about China? I mean, to what extent are we building any degree of reliance in Europe on Chinese tech?
Yeah, so if we are very dependent on the U.S. for digital services, we are possibly getting that level of reliance on Chinese goods. So in the physical world, there is a growing dependency on China. If you look at solar panels, for example, we used to make solar panels in Europe, particularly Germany. Basically, everything is imported from China now. If you look at electric vehicles, they will dominate the European landscape within a decade or so. A lot of them are made by Chinese firms. And a lot of the critical minerals that we need to make everything from, you know, defense kits to just about anything else come from China. And again, in the same way that we've seen Donald Trump try to leverage those dependencies, China seems also to be keen to make its weight felt. And so they have rationed the amount of these critical minerals that companies can get in Europe. That has really kind of set alarm bells ringing in Europe. And at EU level, there have been plans to try and manage these dependencies.
Seb Johnson, from the user's point of view, you can take a very benign attitude towards this question of foreign tech because we just use it, and insofar as it's useful to us, we like it. So can you tell us why this actually matters?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big risks is economic growth, actually. When you look at the economic growth of the US over the last 20 years, it's predominantly come from tech companies. In the last, I think the last year, 80% of GDP growth from America came from data centers alone. In the UK, we're struggling with a lack of growth, stagnant growth. If you want growth, you have to invest in tech companies. That's the main engine for economic growth in the world right now. And so if we are not willing to build our own tech companies, we're never going to see the economic growth. And to your point, the benefits of this new tech evolution get siphoned off to foreign countries. There's also big strategic risks. You know, there's always like the people have been talking about the kill switch, and America has been willing to throw its weight around the technology that it has.
The kill switch.
The idea that they could just shut off our technology, right? And could they theoretically shut off our access to the cloud?
Stanley, is there a united view in Europe about how much of a problem such dependency is?
So traditionally, there have been two camps. One of them was the French camp. You could call them Gaullists. And they had this idea that Europe needs strategic autonomy. It's something that Emmanuel Macron says a lot. And to kind of build independence from America and from China. And Northern Europeans, the Brits when they were in the EU, but also Scandinavians, the Dutch, have always been a little bit more relaxed about foreign dependencies. They made their fortunes by trading with the world, and they want to keep doing that. But I wanted to pick up on something that Seb said about dependencies. Europe is a huge market for these companies, and the dependency kind of goes both ways. Yes, we need the likes of Google and Amazon and Microsoft and so on, but in many ways they need us as well. So Europe, just by virtue of being a quite rich and very large market, is still very relevant to them. Yes, you know, they're very attracted by China, they're very attracted by India and so on. But if you're looking for a very large, rich market, Europe is kind of it. And that's why, to maybe a surprising extent, they were willing to put up with a lot of European regulation. They want to be here.
And again, really important point, which I want to take on board in more substance later. Cecilia, you wanted to come in.
Yeah, I wanted to come in because I wanted to emphasize that these type of dependencies that we're looking at are not just like, let's say, depending on a foreign company for the electric vehicles, as an example that was mentioned before. Depending on big tech companies, US and Chinese big tech companies, for digital technologies, is depending on a few giants for the technologies that are used for governing our lives. And this is why it's important for users, but this is also why it's important for governments and companies. Because whatever you want to manage, whatever you want to govern, if you want to plan your own everyday life, or you are a hospital and want to make the hospital work, you need digital technologies. And this is why this type of kill switch matters so much, that even though it's true that Europe is a big market, European governments have been again and again concealing to everything that these companies want. And the companies have been also pushing the European Union and the UK government to regulate in the exact ways they want. And why do governments accept? Because governments are the ones that can be shut down. So really, even if I also believe that it's highly unlikely, because of the relevance of their business here, that an Amazon, Microsoft or Google will exercise their kill switch, the existence of that kill switch gives the companies and the US government a lot of bargaining power.
So there's a very interesting game being played here. Can we just, Stanley, for a moment look at one aspect of it, which is that when a large American tech company, let's say one which is very big in social media, I mean, another aspect of this might be monopoly practices, but let's say it's a social media problem, and a government says, well, look, we can't have this because actually our young people are being damaged, we don't like the algorithms that you're using. How far is what's happening in Europe motivated by the feeling that we just don't have that degree of control?
I think quite a lot, and it's not specific to Europe, by the way. The U.S. has regulated TikTok, which was Chinese-owned, because they felt that they didn't understand the algorithm and they didn't want an algorithm that was maybe controlled by foreign power to play a dominant part in what the youth of America was seeing every day when they looked at their smartphones. Europe has the same concerns. We regulate maybe a little bit more deliberately, and the EU has imposed rules on platforms to essentially make it easier for states to understand what's going on under the hood. They have regularly fined platforms for breaching the rules, for example, catering to children, and there is a kind of broad sweep across Europe, different countries in Europe, in banning social media for young people, for example. It remains a permissive environment. It remains an environment in which American tech companies are welcome to play in, but it's maybe somewhat less welcoming than it was 5 years ago.
Now, I take it American companies don't welcome these rules.
They don't. I mean, for them, the EU is where you have the most intrusive regulation, especially since Donald Trump has come back to office and seems to be kind of on the same page as many in the tech community. So for, you mentioned antitrust, I think Europe is the place where you would most likely have an objection to companies merging, but also on regulating social networks and on regulating platforms. The EU starts from the principle that if you're very big, that makes you very powerful as a company, and therefore you have to behave in certain ways. That's why there's so many tech lobbyists in Brussels, and it is because they feel that that's the most restrictive environment for them at the moment.
Seb Johnson, can we go a little bit into the question of how this desire for regulation may have affected the capacity of Europe to create its own tech giants and companies?
Yeah, I think it's actually more of a cultural point around regulation.